Too soon for me. Chocolate cashew bar cookies. Preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. 8-ounce by weight package brick-style cream cheese, softened. I used Philadelphia in the silver package. 1 cup, 2 sticks, 8 ounces, 1/2 pound, salted butter, softened. 3/4 cup white granulated sugar. 3/4 cup brown sugar. Pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 1 large egg. 1 teaspoon vanilla extract. 1 teaspoon baking powder. 1/2 teaspoon salt. 2 1/2 cups all-purpose flour. Pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 3/4 cup chopped salted cashews. Measure after chopping. 1 cup, 6-ounce package, milk chocolate chips. Prepare your baking pan. Spray a 9-inch by 13-inch cake pan with PAM or another nonstick cooking spray. Alternatively, you can line the cake pan with heavy-duty foil, spray that, and leave ears on the sides so that you can lift your bar cookies right out of the pan when they're baked and cooled. Hannah's note. If you forgot to take your cream cheese out of the refrigerator to soften it, there's an easy way to do it. Simply unwrap the brick of cream cheese, place it in the bottom of a small microwave-safe bowl, and heat it in the microwave on high for 20 seconds. Let it sit in the microwave for 1 minute, and then take it out and attempt to stir it smooth. If you can't, heat it for another 20 seconds, let it sit for another minute, and try again. Aunt Nancy's note. This recipe is a lot easier and faster to make if you use an electric mixer. You can also do it by hand, but you'll have to stir like the dickens. Place the softened cream cheese and the butter in the bowl of an electric mixer. Beat them together at medium speed until they are blended. Add the white sugar and the brown sugar to the mixing bowl. Beat on medium speed until they are thoroughly combined and the mixture is light and fluffy. Mix in the large egg and the vanilla extract. Beat until they are well incorporated. Sprinkle in the baking powder and the salt. Mix it in at medium speed until the mixture is well blended. Add the flour in half-cup increments, mixing at medium speed after each addition. Shut off the mixer, scrape down the sides of the bowl with a rubber spatula, remove the bowl from the mixer, and give your bar cookie dough a final stir by hand. If you haven't already chopped the salted cashews, do it now. Then measure out 3/4 cup and add the nuts to your bowl. Mix them in thoroughly by hand with a spoon. Mix in the milk chocolate chips. Transfer your bar cookie dough into your prepared pan and spread it out with a rubber spatula or your impeccably clean hands. Pat the dough into the corners and cover the entire bottom of the pan. Press it down as evenly as you can. Bake your chocolate cashew bar cookies at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 30 minutes or until the top is a light golden brown. Let your bar cookies cool on the cold stovetop burner or on a wire rack until the pan is completely cool to the touch. When your bar cookies are completely cool, frost them with milk chocolate fudge frosting, following the directions in the frosting recipe. Let the frosted bar cookies cool completely, then cover the pan with aluminum foil and either store them on the counter or refrigerate them until you'd like to serve them. To serve, cut the bar into brownie-sized pieces, place them on a pretty platter, and serve them with strong hot coffee or cold glasses of milk. Yield, approximately 30 chocolate cashew bar cookies. But this depends entirely on how large you cut the pieces. The milk chocolate fudge frosting recipe follows. Milk chocolate fudge frosting, microwave recipe. 2 tablespoons, 1 ounce, salted butter. 2 cups milk chocolate chips. I used Nestle milk chocolate chips, the 11.5-ounce package. 1 can, 14 ounces, sweetened condensed milk, not evaporated milk. I used Eagle brand. Place the butter in the bottom of a microwave-safe bowl. I used a quart Pyrex measuring cup. Place the milk chocolate chips on top of the butter. Pour in the 14-ounce can of sweetened condensed milk. Heat on high for 1 minute. Then remove from the microwave and stir with a heat-resistant rubber spatula. Return the bowl to the microwave and heat for another minute. Let the bowl sit in the microwave for 1 minute and then take it out. Careful, it may be hot to the touch. And set it on the counter. Attempt to stir it smooth with the heat-resistant spatula. If you can stir the mixture smooth, you're done. If you can't stir it smooth, return the bowl to the microwave and heat on high in 30-second increments, followed by 1 minute standing time until you can stir it smooth. To frost your chocolate cashew bar cookies, simply pour the frosting over the top of your pan and use the heat-resistant rubber spatula to smooth the frosting into the corners. Give the microwave-safe bowl to your favorite person to scrape clean. If you're alone when you're baking these bar cookies, feel free to enjoy the frosting that's clinging to the sides of the bowl all by yourself. Hannah's first note. You can also make this recipe on the stovetop if you prefer. Simply heat the ingredients in a saucepan over medium-low heat, stirring constantly until the chips are melted. Then pull it to a cold burner, let it cool for 1 minute, and proceed to frost your bar cookies. Hannah's second note. This frosting recipe is also enough for a 9-inch by 13-inch cake. Chapter 17. By the time she parked in her spot in back of the cookie jar again, Hannah's head was swimming with information. Carol had been a font of second-hand gossip, telling Hannah details about PK that Hannah probably didn't need to know. Although most of it seemed to be immaterial to her investigation, Hannah had taken the time to cull through the data and write down a few facts that might be useful. Even though it was cold, once she'd shut off her cookie truck, Hannah paged through her murder book and arranged what she'd learned. Pinky was not PK's girlfriend's real name, but no one at KCOW had known her true identity. Carol had mentioned, however, that she thought that Pinky had gone to high school with PK. Hannah flipped to Pinky's name on her suspect list and wrote down that information. She knew that Pinky and PK had broken off their engagement and no longer saw each other. Michelle had told her that, but Mike had once mentioned that anyone who'd had a close personal relationship with the murder victim was automatically a suspect until they'd been cleared. Next, Hannah flipped to the page she'd set aside for Scotty. Her instincts told her that Scotty probably wasn't the killer, but she still had to investigate him. Luckily, she knew where to start. Scotty had mentioned that PK had joined him at the bar in the Lake Eden Inn. Hannah planned to interview Dick, the co-owner and bartender, when they went out there for dinner with Norman tonight. Then there was Betty Jackson. She told Hannah that she liked PK, but Betty had been very quick to mention that she thought there had been bad blood between Scotty and PK. If that turned out to be false, either Betty wasn't as observant as Hannah thought she was, or Betty had deliberately attempted to steer suspicion away from the real culprit. The real culprit could even be Betty. It seemed unlikely, but Hannah wasn't even close to having all the facts. Digging for more information might either substantiate or disprove that theory. The final suspect, Hannah had added, was the unnamed suspect with an unknown motive. That suspect always had a separate page on her suspect list. In some of her investigations, the name was actually filled in, and so was the motive, but not usually this early in an investigation. That could be the case in PK's murder. There was no way she could know that yet. Hannah closed her murder book, stuck it back in her purse, and got out of her cookie truck. A few moments later, she was stepping inside the kitchen at the cookie jar. "Hannah! You're back!" Michelle greeted her with a big smile. "Norman went down to the clinic to check on his mail, and he's coming back at 5:30 to pick us up for dinner. Is that okay with you?"
"It's fine," Hannah responded, hanging her parka on a hook by the door. "Something smells good. What are you baking?"
"Chocolate butterscotch crunch cookies."
"Is that a new recipe?"
"Yes. It's a variation of your chocolate chip crunch cookies and your chocolate sugar cookies. I made a couple of batches of bar cookies, and I wanted to do something in a regular cookie. You had some cornflakes in the pantry, and I found some butterscotch chips, so I decided to try these. They smell great. This is the second batch I made. The first batch is on the baker's rack if you'd like to taste one.
Yes, thanks. Hannah hurried to the baker's rack and plucked a warm cookie from one of the shelves. She took a small bite just to taste, and then she took another much larger bite because the first had been so delicious.
Sit down, Hannah. You look tired. Michelle motioned toward the workstation. I'll pour us both a cup of coffee and we can decide what to bake next.
Please get more of these cookies first, Hannah said, taking another bite as she turned and headed for her favorite stool. When she reached it, she sat down, finished her cookie, and accepted the coffee and plate of cookies that Michelle brought to her.
Do you think the customers will like them? Michelle asked.
They'll love them. Try one and you'll see. Michelle smiled as she sat down on the stool across from Hannah.
Norman told me about all the money in those accounts that Ross left for you. It's a lot of money, Hannah.
I know, Hannah said. But her mind added a second sentence. Just wait until you tell her about the safe deposit box.
Did Mike get any idea of where Ross is from the bank records?
He didn't really tell me if he did or he didn't, and I didn't want to ask in front of Doug. Doug did tell us that Ross requested the money he withdrew that day in bills no larger than 20s and 50s.
Is that important?
I don't think so. Most people who are going on a trip take money with them, and they usually take denominations that are easy to spend.
That makes sense.
I asked Doug if Ross had purchased any traveler's checks.
Smart!
Michelle was clearly impressed.
Did he?
No. Mike followed up by asking if Ross had changed any money into foreign currency, and Doug told him no to that, too.
No clues there, right?
I don't think so. Hannah took a sip of her coffee and picked up another cookie. It was time to tell Michelle about the contents of Ross's safe deposit box.
What?
Michelle asked, noticing that Hannah's expression had changed.
Something else really unusual happened. I found out that Ross had a safe deposit box, and since it was one of those self-service ones, and he left me the keys, Mike went with me to open it.
Hannah described how amazed she'd been to see the stacks of bills, and how they'd discovered the key that had slid under one of the stacks. When she was through, Michelle just shook her head.
"This gets stranger and stranger," Michelle said. "Were you able to identify the key?"
"It looks like a padlock key, and we think it's the key to a storage unit because it says Superior Storage on one side. Mike says he's going to check it out, but he's pretty busy with PK's murder right now, and that's one of the reasons I insisted on keeping the key."
"Can I see it?"
"Yes." Hannah drew the key from her pocket and handed it to Michelle.
"You're right, Hannah. It's a key to a storage unit, and the number's stamped on the back. Superior Storage is a really big chain of storage units, and they're all over the place."
"How do you know that?"
"There's a storage facility marked Superior Storage in St. Paul. I walk by it every day on my way to the campus. One of my college roommates wanted to put some things in storage, so she went to the office and rented a unit. She said the lady told her that they had facilities all over Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa."
"I wonder if Ross's storage unit is in the St. Paul building."
"I can find out right now," Michelle said, reaching for her cell phone.
Hannah listened as her sister made the call. It only took a moment to discover that Ross didn't have a storage unit in the St. Paul building.
"Sorry," Michelle said after she'd ended the call. "The lady told me his name isn't on Unit 312.
"Oh, well, that really would have been too good to be true. Thanks for trying."
"I can get a list online and call some of the other buildings," Michelle offered.
"That's a good idea, but do it tomorrow. That storage unit isn't going anywhere." Hannah got up to get more coffee for both of them. When she'd topped off their cups with hot coffee, she said, "I have something else to tell you. I didn't spend all that time at the bank."
"Where did you go?" I drove out to KCOW. I stopped by here, but everybody was in the coffee shop, so I didn't bother to tell anyone where I was going. I just picked up some cookie bars and dashed out there.
"Tell me about it," Michelle said, leaning forward. "Did you find any new suspects?"
"Yes. And I learned a little more about Pinky."
"Her name?"
"No. Everybody at KCOW just called her Pinky. Nobody I talked to knew her real name. But I did find out that PK and Pinky went to high school together."
"Oh, good! Then we can find out where. We're going to the funeral, and PK's parents will be there. All we have to do is ask them where he went to high school."
"Isn't that a little..."
"Rude?"
Michelle supplied the word. "Not exactly rude, but perhaps a bit inappropriate, considering that we're not close family friends. If we get the chance to talk to them, we should offer our condolences, not ask them questions."
"We don't have to ask them questions."
"We don't? Then how are we going to find out?"
"Mother knows them, and she loves to help you investigate. We'll get her to ask them."
Hannah thought about that for no more than a split second. "That could work. Mother's a genius in social situations. She'll figure out a way to work it into her condolences."
"Did you run into anybody else at KCOW?" Michelle asked.
"Yes. Betty Jackson works out there now."
"Great! Betty's one of the biggest gossips around. Who did she think did it?"
"She didn't hazard a guess, but she did suggest that I talk to the guy who thought he'd be head cameraman until they promoted PK to the job. His name is Scotty, and he claims he wasn't that angry at PK."
"But Betty thinks it could be a workplace rivalry that was taken to the extreme?"
"She backtracked a little when I asked her if she really thought that Scotty killed PK, but it's still possible."
"I just don't know, Michelle. I talked to Scotty, and my gut feeling is that he had nothing to do with it."
"Then you're probably right." "But I can't assume that my gut is correct. I have to investigate Scotty anyway."
"I understand. Tell me about everyone else you saw at KCOW and how you feel about them."
Hannah told Michelle about Carol, describing her in detail. When she was through, Michelle looked thoughtful.
"Did Scotty have an alibi for the time of PK's death?" she asked.
"I didn't ask him because it doesn't matter. PK died because he ate the drugged candy. The candy was the murder weapon, and it was mailed and delivered days before PK ate any."
"Right. And we don't know when the killer sent it because the mailer was thrown away."
"That's true. And even if we knew when it was mailed, we wouldn't know who mailed it. PK's killer could have been hundreds of miles away at the time of his death."
"Or he could have been right here in Lake Eden when PK died," Michelle speculated.
"That's true, too. This is the only murder case I've ever tried to solve where the time of death doesn't relate in some way to the crime. And to make things even more complicated, the victim might not have been the intended victim." Michelle thought about that for a moment.
"You're right. We really can't assume anything."
Both sisters were silent for a long moment, and then Michelle spoke again.
"Let's say you really wanted someone dead. You wouldn't have gone through all the trouble to lace that candy with tranquilizers if you hadn't wanted them to die. After all, there are easier ways to kill someone. And then you went to the trouble to figure out a way to get the candy delivered to your intended victim without being implicated. At least we know that the killer was very determined to kill without being caught."
"That's true," Hannah agreed. "You're describing a person who was driven to commit murder."
"And if you were so driven to kill that particular person in that particular way, and you knew it might not happen immediately, wouldn't you want to stick around to make sure everything eventually happened the way you planned?"
Hannah stared at her youngest sister for a moment, and then she smiled. "You're absolutely right, Michelle. If I were the killer, I'd want to make sure that I was successful, and I wouldn't want to just read about it in the papers. I'd need to know how and when. And then I'd want to find out
how the investigation into the murder was developing, how close the detectives were coming to figuring out the truth.
Exactly. And don't forget about you, Hannah. The killer's going to want to know how your investigation is developing.
Hannah gave a little shiver. You're right, of course. But what if the killer didn't succeed? What if the wrong person died?
Michelle considered that for a moment. Then the killer would want to get as far away from Lake Eden as fast as he or she could.
Right. So we are right back where we started. We still don't know if the right person died or if the killer is still in Lake Eden.
Michelle sighed deeply. That's true. And I'm fresh out of theories. Investigating PK's murder is terribly frustrating, isn't it?
Yes. And we're not even taking into account the fact that our emotions are involved.
I didn't even think of that. Michelle began to frown. I guess that means we have to try to be dispassionate. If we think about it too much, our emotions will color everything. We're both upset over what happened to PK, and I can't decide if it's better or worse if we discover that PK was the intended victim.
And I can't decide if it's worse or better if it turns out that Ross was the intended victim.
I know.
Michelle reached across the table to give Hannah a hug.
There's only one thing I know for sure.
What's that?
That we have to catch the killer.
I agree, Hannah said. We have to catch PK's killer, and that's doubly complicated this time. Both sisters sat there staring down at their coffee cups, as if by some sort of magic the answer to the killer's identity might suddenly appear there.
There's gotta be some way we can cope with this, Michelle said, looking up at Hannah. Do you know how we can do that?
Yes, I do. We have to be intuitive and logical, and be both of those at the same time. And we have to be perfectly neutral about how we want this case to turn out. We can't even think about that aspect of it.
Right. Anything else?
We have to be suspicious of everyone who had any sort of quarrel or resentment toward either PK or Ross, or disliked either one of them for any reason, real or imagined.
That makes sense, but how do we do that?
We have to interview everyone who had any kind of relationship with either one of them. And we need to learn about their lives from birth to the present. All we really know is that we have to collect all the information we can, listen to everyone attentively and critically, and wait for something to make some kind of sense.
That's a tall order. Will it help us catch the killer?
Not necessarily, but that's the only way I know to proceed. It could take us a while, but it's like a giant jigsaw puzzle. Once we shake all the pieces out of the box and figure out how they fit together, we'll get a clear picture of the killer.
I hope so. It sounds almost impossible, but I promise I'll do my best to help.
I know you will. You always do. There's just one more thing, a very important thing that we have to do.
What is it?
We have to eat a lot of chocolate so we don't get discouraged. Michelle just stared at Hannah for a moment, and then she began to laugh.
That I can do,
she declared, jumping up to get more cookies from the baker's rack. Chocolate Butterscotch Crunch Cookies. Preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. 1 cup salted butter, 2 sticks, 1/2 pound. 6 1-ounce squares semi-sweet chocolate, I used Baker's. 1 cup powdered sugar, not sifted, pack it down when you measure it. 1 cup white granulated sugar. 2 large eggs. 1 teaspoon vanilla extract. 1 teaspoon baking soda. 1 teaspoon salt. 3 cups flour. Pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 1 cup, 6 ounce by weight package, butterscotch chips. 2 cups crushed cornflakes. Measure after crushing. Melt the butter and chocolate squares in a saucepan over low heat, stirring constantly or in the microwave. I melted mine in a quart measuring cup in the microwave on high for 3 minutes. Once the butter and chocolate are melted, stir them smooth, transfer them to a large mixing bowl, and add the powdered and white sugars. Stir thoroughly and set the mixture aside to cool. When the mixture is cool enough that it won't cook the eggs, add the eggs one at a time, stirring after each addition. You can use an electric mixer at this point if you like. Mix in the vanilla, baking soda, and salt. Mix it all up together. Add flour in half-cup increments, mixing after each addition. You don't have to be precise. One very important reason for adding flour in increments is so that the whole mountain of flour won't sit there on top of your bowl and spill out all over the place when you try to stir it in. Scrape out the bowl, take it out of the mixer if you used one, and give it a good stir by hand with a wooden spoon. Then add the cup of butterscotch chips and the cups of crushed cornflakes. Mix them in thoroughly. Once the dough has been thoroughly mixed, roll 1-inch dough balls with your fingers. You can also use a 2-teaspoon scooper to form the dough balls. Place the dough balls on a greased cookie sheet. I usually spray mine with Pam or another nonstick cooking spray. 12 dough balls to a standard size sheet. Flatten the dough balls a bit with your impeccably clean palm so that they won't roll off the cookie sheet on the way to the oven. Bake the chocolate butterscotch crunch cookies at 350 degrees for 10 to 15 minutes. Mine took 12 minutes. Cool them on the cookie sheet for 2 minutes, and then remove the cookies to a wire rack to finish cooling. Yield approximately 5 to 6 dozen delicious chocolate butterscotch cookies that everyone will love.
Chapter 18. 10 batches of assorted cookies and bar cookies later, Hannah and Michelle sat down at the workstation again.
"We did it," Hannah said, smiling at her sister.
"You really helped a lot, Michelle."
"It was fun. Do you think that Sally will let us into the conference center to check out our booth?"
"I'm sure she will. I talked to her on the phone today, and she's really excited about having us there. She said that having refreshments and setting up tables and chairs in the center like a food court will make a huge difference in how much longer people will stay and shop."
"She's right about that. Airports and malls have food courts, and so do county fairs. People need to rest, to re-energize."
"That's right. I can't think of a single large company that doesn't have a break room for their employees. Just look at us. We're sitting here at the workstation drinking coffee right now."
"And waiting for Norman."
Michelle glanced up at the clock on the wall.
"He should be here any minute."
As if on cue, there was a knock on the back kitchen door. Michelle laughed and rose to her feet.
"There he is. I'll go let him in."
"Thanks, Michelle," Hannah heard Norman say as he hung his parka on the hook by the back kitchen door. A moment later, he walked over to the workstation. "Hi, Hannah."
"Hi, Norman."
Norman gave her a little hug. "I hope I'm not too early. Are you getting hungry?"
Hannah laughed. "I'm starved."
"That's exactly what Michelle said when she opened the door. Is there anything you want to take out to the conference center tonight? My trunk's practically empty."
"I don't know." Hannah turned to Michelle. "Can you think of anything we should take?" "Not really."
"Okay, then." Norman held out his hand for Hannah. "Let's go eat. When I called, Sally said to go ahead and come out early. She can't fit us into the dining room until 7, but Dick's making his pizza dip in the bar, and it's not karaoke night until after 9.
"That's great,"
Hannah exclaimed, and then she laughed. Norman was staring at her as if she'd gone stark raving mad.
"I'll tell you why it's so wonderful on our way out to the Lake Eden Inn."
After a smooth, cozy ride through the cold, snowy night, Norman pulled into a parking spot marked "Deliveries Only" in back of the Lake Eden Inn.
"Sally said to park back here," he told them. "She left the back door open for us. All we have to do is lock it behind us when we come in."
"This is perfect," Michelle said, slipping out of her boots and switching to her shoes. "It's only a couple of steps to the door, and we don't have to wear our boots."
"It might be snowing when you come out," Hannah warned her youngest sister.
"I know, but I'll take the chance. It's so nice not to have to switch from boots to shoes and then back again."
"You're right," Hannah agreed. "I'll take the chance, too. How about you, Norman?"
"I'll play it safe. That way I can wade out here to get your boots if a blizzard blows in. Unless, of course, you think I have absolutely no spirit of adventure. If that's the case,
I'll go in barefoot."
Hannah laughed, and so did Michelle. "Wear your boots, Norman," Hannah told him. "That's the gentlemanly thing to do. And if there happens to be an unseasonable heat wave, you can always throw down your parka for us to walk over."
All three of them were smiling as they went inside, locked the door behind them, and walked down the narrow hallway that passed Sally's gigantic kitchen. As they went through the lobby and approached the bar, Norman turned to Hannah.
"Go ahead and get a table unless you'd rather sit at the bar, and save a chair or a bar stool for me. I'll take our parkas and hang them up, switch to my shoes, and come right back."
Hannah and Michelle shrugged out of their parkas, handed them to Norman, and went through the swinging saloon-style double doors to Dick's bar. There were already quite a few people at the tables, but only a few customers at the bar.
"Where do you want to go?"
Michelle asked Hannah.
"The bar. Dick's bartending, and it'll be easier to talk to him there."
"You're going to ask him about Scotty and PK?"
"That's my plan. Dick's a very observant guy. I told him that once, and he said that good bartenders had to be observant, that it was part of the job. I want Dick to tell me his impression of the way Scotty and PK were getting along the last time they were here."
"Okay," Michelle agreed. "I'll follow your lead, Hannah."
Hannah walked up to the bar and motioned to a stool.
"Take this one, Michelle. I'll put my purse on the bar stool on the other side of me to reserve it for Norman."
When Hannah and Michelle were seated, Dick hurried over to them.
"Hi, girls,"
he greeted them both with a smile, and then he turned to Hannah.
"You're a little early for karaoke, Hannah."
"You'd better thank your lucky stars for that, Dick. Have you ever heard me sing?"
Dick thought about that for a moment, and then he shook his head.
"I don't think so, at least not that I can remember."
"Oh, you'd remember," Michelle told him emphatically. "Hannah's really loud, and she can't carry a tune in a bucket. Believe me, I know. When I was young, she used to try to sing me to sleep."
"And it didn't work?"
"It worked just fine," Hannah said. Michelle listened for about 30 seconds, and then she went to sleep to get away from my singing.
Dick laughed.
"I think you're both pulling my leg, but I'll consider myself warned. Actually, Hannah, your singing might be a big relief tonight."
There was a grin on Dick's face, and Hannah knew that she was about to be the recipient of his leg pulling.
"What makes you so sure we won't stop in for an after-dinner drink?"
"Alice Vogel and Digger Gibson are coming in. They always sing duets."
"Digger can't sing," Michelle guessed.
"And neither can Alice," Hannah added her question to the mix.
"You can say that, but since I'm their bartender, my lips are sealed, along with my ears."
"Earplugs?" Hannah asked him.
"Far be it from me to say anything unkind about a paying customer. Let's just say that Digger and Alice love to..."
Dick paused, searching for the right word.
"They love to perform together."
The two sisters exchanged glances. It was obvious to both of them that Dick was avoiding use of the word sing.
"We get it," Michelle told him. "Do Digger and Alice think they're really good, performers?"
"They think they're a terrific duo, especially when people applaud much longer and louder than they do for anyone else. Neither one of them realizes that their audience is applauding the fact that they're finished with the song."
"That sounds like me," Hannah admitted. "I thought I was good until my class was singing a song for a school program, and the teacher asked me not to sing, but just to whisper the words instead."
Dick's grin grew wider.
That wouldn't work with Alice and Digger. They're firmly convinced that they're incredibly musical.
And no one's ever told them they're not? Hannah asked.
Dick shook his head. Everybody likes Alice, and everybody likes Digger, and no one wants to hurt their feelings. To tell the truth, there's only one good thing about their performance.
What's that? Hannah asked, aware that she was falling into Dick's trap, but unable to resist hearing the punchline.
It's like this. When Digger and Alice push back their chairs, everybody in the bar knows that they're going to get up on stage. That makes everybody in the bar order doubles of whatever they're drinking, even if they are drinking beer.
How do you double a beer? Michelle asked.
You order two bottles at once.
I wonder if that helps, Hannah wondered aloud.
It sure does, and it doesn't hurt that all of my waitresses pass out disposable earplugs with every double.
Hannah and Michelle had just finished laughing when Norman pushed through the swinging doors of the bar. Hannah waved at him, and Norman walked over to sit down on the stool she'd saved.
Sorry that took so long, he apologized. I ran into one of my patients, and she asked me to tell her all about implants.
Hannah was curious. I thought implants were highly specialized. Do you do implants?
No, but I told her to come in for an exam to see if she was a good candidate, and I said that if she was, I'd give her the name of a good oral surgeon. What'll it be, everybody? Dick asked, placing blue and green striped cocktail napkins with the words Lake Eden Inn in bold black letters in front.
I'll have a glass of your house Chardonnay, Michelle said. I had it the last time I was here, and it was good.
It's Clos du Bois, Dick told her, and then he turned to Hannah. And for you, Hannah?
I'd like an Arnold Palmer, heavy on the iced tea, Hannah said.
You're not drinking? Norman asked her.
Not until dinner. I've been running around all day, and if I have more than one glass, it'll probably put me to sleep.
Dick looked over at Norman. What about you, Norman?
Hot lemonade with cinnamon, please.
Good choice, Dick said, smiling at him.
Dick, Hannah claimed his attention before he could leave to prepare their drinks. Later, when you get a chance, I'd really like to talk to you for a couple of minutes. Dick leaned a bit closer to her.
About PK's murder?
Yes. I have a couple of questions for you. Dick smiled.
Of course you do, Hannah. You always do. Let me get your drinks and check the rest of the people at the bar. Then I'll come over and we can talk.
He glanced at his watch and continued,
We're having hockey playoff pizza dip at the bar tonight, and it's almost ready to come out of the oven. Would you like to try it?
I don't know about them, but I would, Norman said. I'm really hungry.
I'd like to try it, Hannah agreed. Michelle? Count me in. She turned to Dick. You said it was a dip, right?
That's right.
What do you dip in it?
Almost anything. It's my friend John's recipe. We rented rooms in the same house when we were in college, and we used to all get together to watch hockey games on television. John always made his dip, and the girls brought something to use as a...
He paused and glanced at Hannah.
What do you call potato chips when you have them with a dip?
Potato chips. Hannah said with a perfectly straight face. Everyone laughed, and Dick gave a little sigh.
I should have known better than to ask it like that, but I still want to know.
Hannah thought about that for a moment, and then she shrugged. I'm not really sure. I guess you could call them dippers or scoops, but that doesn't sound very appetizing. And if there's a culinary term for them, I've never heard it. Why don't you just sidestep the problem by putting whatever you're using in a bowl or a basket and serving it along with the dip? People are used to eating dips, and they'll know how to use whatever it is. You could even say something like, Here's a bowl of whatever it is to use for dipping.
Okay, that's easy, Dick said, glancing at his watch again. I'll get your drinks now, and then I'll serve your dip.
John's Hockey Playoff Pizza Dip, an appetizer. Preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position.
8-ounce package brick cream cheese, softened to room temperature. I used Philadelphia in the silver rectangular package. 1/2 teaspoon dried oregano. 1/2 teaspoon dried parsley. 1/4 teaspoon dried basil. 1 cup, about 4 ounces, shredded mozzarella cheese. 1 cup, about 4 ounces, shredded Parmesan cheese. 1/2 teaspoon onion powder, or 1 tablespoon finely minced fresh onion. 1/2 teaspoon garlic powder, or 1 teaspoon finely minced fresh garlic. 1 cup spaghetti sauce with meat. I used Prego. 2 ounces of pepperoni slices. 2 to 3 tablespoons sliced black or green pitted olives. 1 small can of button mushrooms. 1 loaf store-bought garlic bread, the kind wrapped in foil, or 2 packages of refrigerated soft breadstick dough. Prepare your pans by lining a pie plate with foil. If you chose to use the tubes of refrigerated breadstick dough, also line a cookie sheet with foil. In a small bowl, combine the softened cream cheese, oregano, parsley, and basil. Mix the ingredients together thoroughly. Hannah's first note. If you've just taken your package of cream cheese out of the refrigerator and you need to soften it in a hurry, simply unwrap it, place it in a small microwave-safe bowl, and heat it in the microwave on high for 20 seconds. Let it sit in the microwave for a minute, and then try to stir it smooth. Repeat as often as necessary until you achieve a smooth texture. Then take the bowl out of the microwave and mix in the oregano, parsley, and basil. Mix thoroughly. Spread the cream cheese and herb mixture out in the bottom of your prepared pie pan. In a separate bowl, mix the shredded Parmesan and shredded mozzarella cheeses together. Hannah's second note, you can use your impeccably clean fingers to mix the cheese together. Sprinkle 1/2 of the shredded cheese mixture on top of the cream cheese and herb mixture. Measure out the cup of spaghetti sauce and place it in a small bowl. Mix the onion and the minced garlic, or the onion powder and garlic powder, into the spaghetti sauce. Spoon the spaghetti sauce mixture over the top of the contents of the pie pan. Use a rubber spatula to spread it out evenly, but do not mix it in. Sprinkle the remaining cheese mixture over the top of the spaghetti sauce mixture. Arrange the pepperoni evenly on top of the cheese. Place the sliced olives on top of the pepperoni. Pat the button mushrooms dry with paper towels and then arrange them on top of the olives. Bake your hockey playoff pizza dip at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for a total of 25 to 30 minutes. After your pizza dip has been in the oven for 5 minutes, place the garlic bread in the oven and bake according to package directions. If you've decided to make the soft breadsticks instead of the garlic bread, cut each breadstick in 2 pieces and follow the package directions to bake them. Coordinate baking times so that everything comes out of the oven at approximately the same time. Slice your garlic bread, put the slices in a napkin-lined basket, and serve it with your dip. Since you've already cut the soft breadsticks in 2 pieces, simply place them in a napkin-lined basket. Hannah's third note. You might want to bake the soft breadsticks a bit longer so that they will hold their shape when your guests dip them in the hockey playoff pizza dip. Both the soft breadsticks and the garlic bread should be on the crispy side for ease in dipping. You can also use chips in place of the bread. Chapter 19. They had almost finished their drinks by the time Dick was through refilling glasses and delivering his dip. Hannah, who had been keeping an eye on the time, gave a relieved sigh. She wanted to interview Dick tonight, and she really hadn't wanted to come back to the bar with karaoke going full swing. "Okay, Hannah," he said, leaning over the bar toward the three of them. "I've got at least 5 minutes before anyone's going to want a refill." "Thanks, Dick. And before I forget to tell you, your pizza dip was wonderful." As Norman and Michelle took turns complimenting Dick on his college friend's creation, Hannah drew her murder book out of her purse and grabbed one of the numerous pens that had dropped down to the bottom. Then, when there was a lull in the conversation, she began to ask the questions she'd thought of on the drive out to the inn. "Please tell me about the last time you saw P.K.?"
"Of course. P.K. came in after work with Scotty. I'd never seen them together before, so I was a little curious. They ordered drinks, beer for Scotty, and a virgin Cuba Libre for P.K.
"Did they seem to be friendly?" Hannah asked.
"Not exactly. Polite, yes. Friendly, not when they first came in the bar."
"But they were friendly later?" Michelle asked the obvious question.
"Yes. P.K. was okay from the beginning, but Scotty was a little reserved. It's hard to tell with him, but I've known him long enough to read his body language."
"Was it different than it usually is when he comes in here?" Norman asked. Dick nodded.
"They sat down at a table, and Scotty sat up straight, not relaxed at all, and he didn't prop his elbows on the table the way he usually does."
"Anything else?" Hannah asked him.
"Yes. Scotty didn't touch his beer right away, and he likes to drink off the layer of foam on top."
Dick stopped and gave a little shrug.
"I know these things are little things, but they tell me what kind of mood my regulars are in."
"And Scotty didn't behave the way he usually did?" Hannah asked.
"No. Something was different with him. He looked at his beer, but he didn't pick up the glass to drink it. And he didn't dig into the pizza dip until after he'd talked to P.K. for a couple of minutes."
"Did you overhear anything they said?" Michelle asked.
"No, I wasn't that close. I was curious because Scotty wasn't his usual self, but I didn't want to be obvious. I just watched to see what was going to happen because I could tell they were talking about something serious."
"How could you tell?" Hannah followed up.
"Because Scotty locked eyes with P.K., and he didn't look away for a couple of minutes. And then both of them took a sip of their drinks and dug into my pizza dip. There were other things, too, things that told me everything was okay between them."
Hannah didn't say anything. She just raised her eyebrows in an unspoken question, and Dick went on.
"Scotty came out here almost every week with 5 or 6 friends, and he was buddy-buddy with them. They laughed a lot and kidded each other the way good friends do."
Norman looked curious. "And Scotty acted like that after he had the conversation with P.K.?"
"Not exactly. They still weren't buddy-buddy, but I could tell that they were getting along. Scotty's elbows went up on the table, and he took a big swallow of his beer. And he smiled at P.K. for the first time since they sat down. There was another thing, too. They were passing the basket of chips back and forth. That's when I figured out that whatever had been bothering Scotty had been resolved."
"You notice a lot about people, Dick," Michelle told him. "Did you take psychology courses in college?"
Dick shook his head. "Never, but I've been a bartender for a long time. That's how I paid for college. It's a skill a good bartender picks up because it's needed."
"Needed?" Michelle looked confused. "I know you have to pay attention to people so you notice when they need something, but it sounds as if you notice a lot more than that."
"That's true. Bartenders need to become familiar with the people they serve. It's a matter of self-preservation."
"How so?" Norman asked.
"As a bartender, you don't want to serve another drink to someone who's about to cross the line between having a good time and becoming too drunk to drive. If you do that, it's actionable. A good bartender knows when to cut someone off. And that means you have to watch for all sorts of little signs that will tip you off."
"Did Scotty ever get..." Hannah paused. She'd been about to ask if Scotty had ever gotten drunk, but Dick probably wouldn't tell her.
"Did he get a little tipsy?"
Dick supplied the rest of her question.
"Yes. Only once that I can remember. He usually had no more than 3 glasses of beer. The only time I saw him drink more was when he was in here with his wife. It was his birthday, and they were celebrating with a bunch of their friends. I was wondering if I should stop serving him, but his wife came up to the bar and assured me that she was driving home. She even showed me the car keys."
Hannah checked another item off her mental checklist. She knew that occasionally when someone had one too many drinks, resentments flared.
So Scotty wasn't a heavy drinker?
No.
Dick shook his head. I never saw Scotty order a mixed drink.
He was a beer man, but only tap beer. He never drank bottled beer, and a glass of beer would last him at least an hour, sometimes longer. Heavy drinkers generally go for something with more alcoholic content, like hard liquor or fortified beer or wine.
I know what you really want to know, Hannah, so I'll cut to the chase. There's no way Scotty left here drunk the night he was here with PK.
Dick's phone rang, and he turned around to answer it. A moment later, he was back.
That was Sally. Your table's ready, and she wants to know if it's all right to join you for dessert. She said she has some information for you.
Once they'd assured Dick that it would be fine if Sally joined them for dessert, Hannah, Michelle, and Norman left Dick's bar. They walked down the hallway to the restaurant and entered the alcove that contained the receptionist's stand. Dot Larson was working as the hostess, and she greeted them warmly.
Hi, guys. Sally said you were coming out for dinner. She saved a private booth for you, and she asked me to take you there.
Dot turned to Hannah.
Did Dick tell you that Sally wants to join you for dessert?
Yes, he did. And we told him that was just fine. Thanks for asking, Dot. How's the baby?
He's not a baby anymore. If you ask him, he's a big boy now, and that means he gives my mother a run for her money.
Your mom is still babysitting for you? Michelle asked.
Yes, she wants to babysit until Jamie gets in preschool. Then it'll be only half days. That'll be 2 years from now, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
Hannah smiled. You always say that.
That's because my grandmother came from Delta Country, and they were flooded out every 4 years or so. And before I forget, Sally wanted me to remind you to enter our Christmas decorating contest. All you have to do is join a committee, bring your favorite ornament from home, and hang it on your tree. All employees vote, and the three best Christmas trees win a trophy.
Dot turned to Norman.
Follow me, and I'll show you which booth Sally chose for you tonight, and introduce you to your waitress. She's new, but she's really good, and I know you'll like her.
With Dot in the lead, the three of them climbed up the steps leading to the raised area on the far side of the dining room. They walked past the curtained booths and stopped at the one on the far end.
Sally saved this one for you, Dot told them. She told me that she had something important to tell you. I'm thinking that it's either about the convention or PK's murder.
Hannah just smiled. She doubted very much that the bulk of Sally's conversation would be about the convention. She wouldn't have needed to put them in a curtained booth if that were the case. Hannah was almost certain that Sally wanted to tell them something about PK that might relate in some way to the murder investigation. Hannah's curiosity was piqued, but she knew it wouldn't be satisfied until after they'd finished their entrees and it was time for dessert, coffee, and whatever Sally had to impart.
"Just one more thing before I leave," Dot said after they were seated. "Sally says she really wants you to try her new appetizer."
Hannah almost groaned. She knew she'd eaten far too much of Dick's pizza dip, and now there was another appetizer to try.
"It's called Crunchy Salty Cheesy Prosciutto and Asparagus Rolls. And they're very light and not at all filling,"
Dot said, as if she'd somehow read Hannah's mind.
"They sound great," Michelle commented, taking a sip of the wine that she'd brought with her from the bar.
"I love asparagus. I think it's my favorite vegetable."
"And it goes so well with prosciutto," Norman added.
Hannah felt her appetite beginning to return. "What does Sally use for the wrapper?" she asked.
"Puff pastry rolled out thin," Dot told them. "They're great with phyllo dough, too, but it's a lot harder to work with. They're baked in a hot oven, so they turn out nice and crisp, and they're served hot."
Yes, her appetite was definitely coming back, Hannah decided, as she thought about Sally's new creation. Perhaps she could have an entree after all, and still have room for dessert. Their waitress arrived and poured more wine for Michelle and a glass for Hannah. She was carrying a glass of iced tea for Norman, and she set it down in front of him.
She whisked away his nearly empty glass, handed it to her busboy, and turned to them again.
"Dot told me you wanted to try Sally's new appetizer, and that's baking right now for you. Have you thought about what you'd like for an entree, or would you like a little more time?"
"I'm ready with my entree order," Michelle told her. "I'll have the center-cut pork chops with fingerling potatoes. I know that comes with carrots and sweet mustard sauce, but could I have creamed spinach instead?"
"Certainly," their waitress responded. "All of the entrees tonight come with Piccadilly cheese mini muffins that we include in the bread basket. Is that all right, or would you rather have sourdough soft rolls?"
"I'll try the mini muffins. I've never had those before." Michelle turned to Hannah and Norman.
"Would you two excuse me for a moment? I have to make a phone call to see if Lonnie can drop by the condo later, and the reception isn't very good in these curtained booths."
"Sally's got a hot spot in her office," their waitress told her. "If you stand in the hallway outside the office door, the reception's really good.
I always duck out there when I need to make a call."
"Thanks," Michelle said and rose to her feet. "I'll be back as soon as I can."
"Go ahead, Michelle," Hannah said with a nod. Perhaps Michelle's cell phone didn't work well in this curtained booth, but their sister-to-sister radar was working just fine. She knew exactly why Michelle wanted Lonnie to drop by to see them tonight.
"I'd better tell you what I want now before I forget," Norman said to the waitress. "You can leave the iced tea, but could I please have a glass of ginger ale, too? I'm really thirsty tonight."
"I'll bring one now, and another with your entree," their waitress promised. "Did you have any of Dick's pizza dip?"
"We all did," Hannah answered her.
"Then that's probably why you're thirsty. Dick loves to spice it up."
She turned to Hannah.
"And for you, ma'am?"
"I have a question before I order my entree. What are Piccadilly cheese mini muffins? I don't believe I've ever seen them on the menu before."
"That's because they're a new item tonight. We're trying them out with our customers. Sally got the recipe from her grandmother, and they were very popular in her grandfather's pub."
"Then I'd like to try one also," Hannah decided. "And for an entree, I'll have the half Cornish game hen with sautéed button mushrooms and wild rice."
"Very good,"
their waitress said, jotting it down on her pad before she turned to Norman.
"And for your entree, sir?"
"I'll have the duck with raspberry sauce and the braised snow peas."
"Would you care to try the Piccadilly cheese mini muffins?" their waitress asked him.
Norman looked over at Hannah and smiled.
"Absolutely. I don't want to be the only holdout."
"I'll send my busboy over with the muffins and the rest of tonight's bread basket," their waitress said, pulling aside the curtains and stepping out of the booth.
She closed the curtains behind her, and Hannah turned to face Norman. "Michelle is calling Lonnie to come over tonight so that we can try to find out how Mike is coming along with his investigation."
"I guessed that."
"Then will you please come over after you drop us at the cookie jar?"
"Of course I will. I'll stay at your place for as long as you need me, Hannah."
At that exact moment, the curtains were pulled aside, and Dolores stood there, glaring. She glanced behind her and stepped in quickly, pulling the curtains shut behind her.
"Hannah Louise Swenson! How dare you! And you, Norman! You should know better than this!"
Both Hannah and Norman stared at Dolores with puzzled expressions.
"Norman knows better than what, Mother?" Hannah asked her.
"I heard what you said to my daughter, Norman. It's simply scandalous."
It took a moment, but then Hannah realized what her mother had overheard. The last thing Norman had said to her before Dolores had jerked back the curtains was, "I'll stay at your place for as long as you need me, Hannah."
"But, Mother, you don't understand," Hannah began to explain. "Norman didn't mean—" "I know precisely what Norman meant," Dolores interrupted her, "and I can tell you right now that I do not approve."
"Calm down, Mother," Hannah pleaded. "You don't know what Norman meant. If you'll listen to me for a moment, I'll tell you."
"You want me to listen to you?"
Dolores looked completely outraged.
"I'm ashamed of you, Hannah. You should know better than to come out here with Norman and sit in a private booth with him. It fairly shouts to the whole world that you have something to conceal."
"But, Mother,"
You just don't understand.
Oh, I understand perfectly. And let me tell you what you should understand. Married women do not hide behind curtains with men who are not their husbands. Ross hasn't even been gone for 3 full weeks.